Good afternoon, friends. My name is Maxim Nevenshin. Today, our guest is a military analyst, an officer in the United States Armed Forces, and the author of the Telegram channel Stas There and Back, Stanislav Krapivnik. Stanislav, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Stanislav, we see that Trump has arrived in China. Yes. So there will be a serious conversation with Xi Jinping. Then Vladimir Vladimirovich will arrive. And we are increasingly hearing that from Europeans as well, and from many of our analysts, that Europe is preparing for war. They are propping up Zelensky, providing him loans, and jointly producing weapons. So far, Ukraine is only demonstrating its military potential or serving as an experimental testing ground for the Europeans. Tell me, please, what about the Europeans themselves? They are also preparing for military actions against the Russian Federation, right? Could you analyze what the Europeans would fight with? Because our analysts say that if the United States withdraws aid to Ukraine, then Ukraine will collapse. But the United States seem to have stepped back. Will Ukraine collapse? And will Europe be able to resist? What is Europe preparing to fight with? Unfortunately, that is unclear to the United States.
Well, the United States has not actually withdrawn yet. It has reduced aid to Ukraine. Now it is routing that aid through partners of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, if you can call them that, its subordinates. Then it is all arranged so that it ends up in Ukraine. So yes, the goal now is to keep Ukraine on the battlefield for at least 2 more years. As troop numbers fall, women on the front lines of the armed forces of Ukraine rose from 5% to 7.5% this year. And that trend is only increasing, because there are not enough men. At the same time, Europeans, to ease social pressure at home, are beginning to transport. If you believe the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine, the French have already handed over 40,000 Ukrainian men into Kyiv's hands. Of course, they send them straight to the front. Who goes to which units? The younger and healthier go to assault brigades, where they are at least somewhat trained. Those who are 35 or older, those without military experience, those with health issues, are, roughly speaking, used as cannon fodder. They either man static positions to hold them, or they are simply thrown in waves to soften Russian positions before experienced troops move in. Merz has already said that we can start evacuating 350,000 Ukrainian men.
History is full of blank spots. Behind the facade of familiar events lie technologies of forgotten civilizations and secret mechanisms of controlling humanity. On June 27th in Moscow at the Izmailovo Hotel, there will be a conference called Hidden History. The conference will feature Alexander Artamonov, Viktor Yefimov, Dmitry Peritolchin, Dianis Koptar, and Maxim Gaubitz. Tickets for the conference and the online stream are available via the link in the description.
We saw riots in Ireland that were precisely over this issue, because Ireland has taken in more Ukrainian refugees than any European country except the Russian Federation, and social unrest has already started there. And now they are starting to cut all social benefits and are trying to expel them from the country in order to somehow keep their own population calm because of the economic collapse to ease the social burden.
I am asking you about something else. About the weapons Europe might use, if they are even planning to use them and are preparing to rearm.
Partly, of course, they will produce their own weapons. There are, of course, big problems, because there is not enough steel and not enough energy resources. and there is not enough technology for more advanced systems. Europe as a bloc has fallen far behind on many high technology fronts. For example, they do not have a fifth generation fighter. The joint French Doran project collapsed last year and was shut down. Russia, China, and America, of course, are developing them. And then there is the Rafale, right? Yes, I believe it is of the new generation. There is also the Eurofighter, which they have all been trying to bring together but cannot. Russia, China, and America are, of course, all working on sixth WAR generation fighters. The Europeans cannot even build a fifth WAR generation one, so they have problems. But the so-called arsenal of democracy, as the Americans have called themselves since the Second World War, is all intact. In America, there are huge stockpiles of old equipment. What do I mean? Just looking at tanks, for example, or armored vehicles. America has over 2,500 units of the M1 tank. That is the first WAR generation Abrams. It has a 105mm gun and steel armor. They have 2,500 second DOR generation tanks, the M1A1, with a 120mm gun and Chobham armor, that is, multi-layer armor. And right now the Americans are actively, these are mothballed. The Americans have begun actively upgrading first WAR generation tanks to second DOR generation tanks at home. So where will those tanks go? Good question. If you have 5,000 tanks you do not need because you are already on the third generation and perhaps testing a move to the fourth, why upgrade first WAR generation tanks to second WAR generation? Would it not be easier just to cut them up and send them for scrap? Of course not, because you can still sell them. But for that, you need a war. You need a theater of operations. Right now, we are seeing the Americans pull out of Europe. As loudly announced by Donald Trump, about 5,000 troops will be withdrawn from Vilseck, Germany, where I served and where my brigade was. They plan to pull out a Stryker brigade, and other units will be removed, and then, as he already said, we will withdraw from Italy, too. Quietly before this, they removed the 82nd Airborne Division from Poland, withdrew the 101st Airborne Helicopter Division, and an airmobile unit from Romania. The Americans are pulling their troops out. Why? Because they will withdraw from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and become a neutral force that supplies and sells equipment, making money from the Europeans.
So, if you read the signs as meaning the Americans will leave the European continent and supply their weapons there.
Of course. Under a neutral flag, they will be able to bring their energy resources to Europe and bring their equipment to Europe. Some equipment is already in place. Because the Americans, to be able to react quickly in case of a third world war with the Soviet Union, began to position divisions of equipment without crews. Crews can be flown in fairly quickly on civilian aircraft and then be assigned to that equipment. There is a minimal number of personnel there, mechanics who maintain and run the vehicles, so they drive some distance each month. There is a 10-kilometer loop, so the vehicles ran, and that is it. And then all of that just waits, and the soldiers fly in, and there is your new equipment. Well, conditionally new. They did the same in Saudi Arabia after the sandstorms in the desert, when they were able to get into the Gulf. There, two divisions of heavy equipment are deployed, and it is waiting in Iraq, to be precise. No, in Saudi Arabia, yeah. That way they were able to react much faster to the second Iraq war, because the equipment was already there, and they did not have to ship everything from scratch. The idea being, yes, you keep that gear because you can sell it. And also, if you look at the Bradley infantry fighting vehicles, the older models, they are armored. They are armored personnel carriers, yes, the American Bradley armored vehicle. There are about 4,500 to 5,000 of them as well. Again, nobody is scrapping them. They even have air defense systems dating back to the 1960s. Missile systems that are just sitting there, and no one is scrapping those either. They were taken out of United States military service back in the 1990s, and no one is disposing of them. Why is that? Well, because they were actually bringing those systems to Ukraine too. so that the armed forces of Ukraine could use them.
Am I understanding the next part correctly, Stanislav? That the Americans are planning to pull out, and naturally, when they leave, they either have to take all of it with them or leave it behind. And to leave it behind, you need to pay for storage or oblige someone to buy it. And so that someone would buy the necessary equipment so it would actually be useful in combat. And Europe is being prepared for real military action, but without the United States.
Yes. Of course, Europeans want the United States to stay and fight with them. But there is no interest for the United States in that. The objective here is to make money. In 1998, I first read an article in Forbes about this very topic, because the United States needs another good war. The Second World War was a good war, not because of Hitler being a Nazi, but because the United States rose out of the Great Depression to become the world's leading economic power, with roughly 60% of the world's gross domestic product, and already in 1998 they began to discuss it that openly. We need to push for a major war in Europe. Then we would be able to write off our debts, a new Marshall Plan, and we would be the creditors again and extract everything, and our companies would work at their expense to put Europe back on its feet. That was in 1998. They have been preparing for this for about 20 years and pushing it, and very successfully, you could say. And that is why it is important to understand which equipment will be deployed. Many will say now, well, with drones, what difference does it make? Well, I would say that too.
Look at Ukraine, meaning technological superiority in many respects is with the Russian Federation. But drones are not getting through.
Exactly. This is just a normal phase in the evolution of military technology. If you look at the First World War, machine guns, well, they existed before, but then they appeared in large numbers. A machine gun that could wipe out an entire infantry battalion in 3 or 4 minutes. I remember reading an interview with a German machine gun crew that stopped firing. Why did they stop firing? Because it was not war. It was just slaughter. They destroyed a battalion of British infantry in 3 minutes. They simply swept through the ranks 3 or 4 times. Those in the ranks stood up and ran forward along the line of contact, and the gunners just swept them with the machine gun 3 or 4 times. Nothing was left. We could not. It was just annihilation. It was not war. The machine gun stalled everything. Any advances came at huge cost. The machine gun was the drone technology of its day. Infantry could not move. So what came next? Artillery tried to alleviate it, but it was largely unsuccessful. Then airplanes appeared. Not just early reconnaissance planes trading pistol shots, but soon aircraft that could also drop bombs showed up. They started using them that way. And finally, the tank appeared. A machine gun could do nothing to a tank. It simply could not do anything. The tanks were slow. Tanks kept breaking down all the time. But tanks completely changed the battlefield, and the Germans did not adapt. We see the same thing here. Now modern machine guns have appeared. In other words, drones. Infantry cannot advance, and tanks likewise cannot advance, because even tanks are forced to crawl like turtles. To some extent, they can still move, of course, but they have enough trouble trying to armor themselves against drone strikes. They become virtually blind. And they have other problems advancing, too. The fast maneuvering we were used to since World War II, through the Great Patriotic War and up to the present, has all vanished because of drones. Well, technology keeps moving forward, of course. A lot of anti-drone technology has emerged and is already on the battlefield. From laser systems that we produce, the Americans produce and the Chinese produce. I literally watched a clip today where they got to aerosol paint cans. A drone flies at a soldier. The soldier fires a high-pressure spray paint can straight at it. The red paint covers the drone, getting into its two motors. A drone is quite a fragile instrument, to be honest. But the problem is that these solutions handle one target at a time. Lasers are great weapons. In half a second, they melt through the plastic. The drone drops to the ground. They cut it apart in half a second. So these are actual lasers now? No, not like that. A big system mounted on very large vehicles, like a Humvee or some Teague, or on a pickup truck. It is a pretty large system. The Chinese showed that at their parade last year. We have those systems. We know the Americans have them, because the Americans, about 6 months ago, they accidentally shot down balloons at a wedding, Mexican balloons. They used those lasers to shoot down drones from various cartels. But it was all hush-hush. It only hit the news when a wedding near the border, and there are populated areas all along that stretch of the border. Someone released balloons, and the American radar system, which automatically could not tell a large drone from a balloon, fired at the balloon. Everyone saw that red laser as it blew the balloon up. That is when it hit the news. Normally, they do not fire in the desert, but here, they fired right over a town.
So the Star Wars era is actually coming. They are already here. And, say, if such a system is on a pickup or a Tigran, a pickup, it is much cheaper and easier. This installation can be present. Someone drives it out.
A person is just at the wheel and monitoring. The system is automated. It can rotate 360 degrees, yes.
Quickly. How long does the burning or melting take? Half a second.
That is for plastic. For airplane-type drones, it takes 3 seconds and they catch fire. That, of course, is a larger airframe. And normally, that is wood, not plastic. Plastic melts instantly. They are fragile. Drones are really fragile. When the wind is strong, or there is fog, rain, or snow, they do not fly. Lasers also do not work in those conditions. They do not fly. What is the problem? Lasers are expensive. Lasers work wonderfully depending on the environment. In open fields, they are great. But in cities, it is much harder. They can destroy a drone at up to 5 to 6 kilometers. But again, they can only engage one target at a time. If you attack such a system with 20 to 30 drones coming in from different directions across a wide field of view, you can take out that laser. 1, 2, 3, and it cannot keep up. 20 seconds. It still cannot manage, because the system has to reorient to the next target, then the next, and the next. These are seconds, maybe 1 second. But if enough drones approach from different directions and from altitude, they will overwhelm that system, because the system can only engage one target at a time. Same goes for nets, for buckshot-like munitions, and for using drones against drones. Are you saying there is no countermeasure against a drone? No, of course there are countermeasures, but not against a swarm of drones. Okay, what if there are 4 lasers, 4 of these systems? The limitation is the power supply, because, if I remember correctly, each laser draws about 20 kilowatts. So there are constraints. You need a vehicle. A person cannot carry that on their shoulders. You need a vehicle so the battery can be carried on a very large platform. This is where tanks that have been written off could come in handy. And another technology has emerged. Right now, all 3 sides are developing electromagnetic pulse systems. We know what an electromagnetic pulse is. Excuse me, who are the 3 sides? We, China, and the United States. The main technological powers in the world, so to speak. Military and technological, broadly speaking. In many areas, other countries have fallen behind. War drives technological progress. It always has been. First the sword, then the shovel. That is how it has always progressed. Now they are developing electromagnetic pulse sources. What is an electromagnetic pulse? It is a wave of charged particles that strikes electronics and long runs of high voltage cable, inducing currents that burn out the electronics. We have seen that, for example, from the sun. In the 1880s, there was a solar flare strong enough to destroy all the communications of the day. That was the telegraph system. The cables literally caught fire, and the people who operated them. There was some solar flare. It was a pretty powerful solar flare. If the same kind of flare happened again, all the electronics on the planet would simply be fried. This is the threat we live under, but nobody thinks about it. Well, it is also produced by a nuclear detonation, which is why the first nuclear detonation in any nuclear war would not be over a city. It would be in space, over the hemisphere you want to plunge into darkness. The wave spreads out, and any equipment that is not protected, not underground or not shielded by some kind of metal armor or other protective materials, will be destroyed. All modern machines would simply be destroyed. Interesting Spax Follies. More under how.
Is this electromagnetic emission simply radiating in all directions, or only in a particular plane, or can it be focused into a narrow, point-like beam like a laser? Can it be aimed at a specific point with a narrow beam? How does that work?
From a nuclear explosion, of course. It is spherical. It radiates in all directions, into space and along the Earth.
Electromagnetic.
That is the first wave from a nuclear detonation. If it is close to Earth, it will not travel as far. In space, it can cover an entire continent, like North America or most of Europe, for example. But that's extreme. Of course, we do not need that. They are now developing it using microwave technology. Panels. The Chinese are already out in the field. They are now testing a new system, a large rectangle, kind of like the old one.